Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, our next guest has given a whole new meaning to the marriage vows in sickness and in health. Tanya Hayes was just 22 years old when her fiancé and soulmate Warren was diagnosed with a brain tumour. Tanya decided to continue on with the marriage. She married her man, even though it meant her becoming his full-time carer. She joins us now from Wollongong. Tanya Hayes, great to have you on Open House.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did you and Warren meet?
Sure. I met Warren when I was just 19. I was a legal secretary and Warren was a real estate agent. And there was this instant attraction straight away. We were both heavily involved in fitness and, yeah, paths crossed many times. And after going out for 2.5 years, we fell deeply in love with one another, and Warren proposed on the most romantic day of the year, being Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. and the future just seemed very promising for us both, and we started planning our life together.
Mm. Well, what did you dream? What did you plan? What did you envisage in your mind as to, you know, your married life together?
Well, because we got on so well, the time that we spent together was just wonderful. We never got sick of the time that we had by each other's side, and yeah, so we just planned to have children together, to live happily ever after like most people do, and you just don't expect anything will happen to you at such a young age. You kind of think you're kind of invincible. Both enjoyed our careers. Warren had financially established himself, and yeah, life just seemed too good to be true, and we often said to ourselves, my gosh, is this the way life's meant to be? And often had to pinch ourselves that it was just too good to be true.
Well, that was 11 years ago, and then one day you and Warren are driving, and, maybe Warren was driving to work or something like that. Maybe he was just alone, but yes, his vision started to go, didn't he?
He was, yes. He'd been having a few little hiccups, but nothing that tipped him over the edge until the day he was driving to work, and he lost his vision. He pulled over, his vision came back, but he had these massive thumping migraines, so after continuing on to work, he got to work and he just had new glasses. So he decided to go back to his optometrist to see what was going on. And immediately the alarm bells started to alarm. She immediately said, look, my gosh, there's a lot of pressure behind your eyes. I need to get you into a specialist. And within the hour, he was in the specialist, who then had actually sent him for a CAT scan on his brain. Life was just falling apart really quick. Warren was very pale and thumping headaches and, yeah, wasn't coping really well. So we knew something was seriously amiss, and we just had to put our finger on what it was.
And, of course, it turned out to be the brain tumour.
It did, yes. By the following morning, 12 hours later, we had a phone call saying, my gosh, you have an 8-centimetre acoustic neuroma brain tumour.
It really is big, isn't it? I mean, those of us who know nothing about brain tumours, we just can imagine an 8-centimetre wide thing in our head.
A pinprick, like 1 centimetre, is quite a serious thing. When you're talking about the brain, it controls everything about your whole body. And so it was very serious, very dangerous, and 8 centimetres going from his ear canal right down to his brain stem. So it takes up a large area of the small amount of area that's left in your brain. So very serious. We were told that Warren didn't have much time to live. He'd probably have about a week if it didn't get removed, and he could possibly die on the operating table instantly. Mm. So 1 minute you're planning your wedding. We were just a couple of months short of our wedding day. Everything was paid for and booked, and then all of a sudden, within one day, we were told our whole world could fall apart, and I would have to say goodbye to Warren. So I must say, our life crumbled in that instant, and we were both completely shattered.
If you can attach words to the emotions, how did you feel during that time?
Oh, we were just both numb, completely numb, just didn't know what to say. It was just an unbelievable time that you kind of think, no, we're just so young. How could this be happening to us? So we were both crying and wondering how we were going to cope and how we were going to get through the next day. So I think for Warren, he was just shell-shocked, completely shell-shocked. He withdrew, went into his shell, and, struggled to actually speak another word for the 3 days waiting to go into hospital.
Really? Just out of shock?
Just complete shock. When we found out on the Friday afternoon, we took off to Sydney for a couple of days to spend in the city just to get away and just to get our head around it. And Warren didn't speak that whole weekend. He, as I said, withdrew, went into his shell. His head was like a ticking time bomb. His face was red. We knew time was of the essence. We were running out of time, and unfortunately we couldn't get into the hospital until the Monday morning. And we were just hoping and praying that, please, God, give us enough time and allow us to be able to get there.
Tanya Hayes is with us on Open House. The podcast is on theopenhouse.net.au. Her book is called Love Has No Limits, and it's a story of, it's a love story in many ways. So you did actually, of course, go through that first operation, and Warren underwent that. Tell me about that.
Yes, he went into for the first surgery. The first surgery lasted 12 hours, at which time they could only remove 3/4 of the brain tumour. It was just so serious and dangerously tangled around the brainstem. And people, if they know about the brainstem, it controls your breathing. So one wrong move and your life will come to an end instantly. So they couldn't keep operating. 12 hours after, they decided to actually sew Warren back up, put him onto a ventilator and hope that he would survive the next coming weeks, at which time he would then go on for a second bout of surgery.
And at one stage, they actually even suggested, look, this may not be worth it. Maybe you need to let go of Warren. You need to actually turn off the life support system. When did that happen?
That happened quite down the track, probably about 10 months into Warren's stay. Right. Warren was in hospital for a total of 446 days. Now, that's 16 months. It's hard to believe that someone could actually lay in a bed for that long. He was on a ventilator most of the time. He developed fungal and bacterial meningitis, golden staph, pneumonia, a deep vein thrombosis blood clot, and then his spasmodic breathing, which where he just stopped breathing for no apparent reason. And it was at that time, after Warren had been on a ventilator on and off many, many times, about 10 months into this journey, that the doctor said, look, Warren has suffered every serious complication imaginable. He's lost 36 kilograms. He can't move. He can't talk. He can't eat. He's virtually a vegetable laying in a bed. It's time to let him go. And they sat me down and said, look, Tanya, I think you need to let him go and sign the forms and say, look, it's time to turn off the ventilator. And I must say at that time I was just so upset, but then I was so annoyed at the same time that I'd given up my job and spent 12 hours a day by Warren's bedside and fought for his survival for such a long time, that how could anybody take this beautiful man away from me? We had this love story burning inside us, and I was devoting my life to Warren, and I wanted it to continue. I didn't want to let it go. So I took a deep breath and I prayed to God and I said, please give me the right decision. What will I do here? I want to keep going. And so I just told the doctor there was no way he was going to allow that to happen. There's no way he was going to take Warren's life away from me. And I know I made the right decision that day, because Warren's here today and we have a great quality of life.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a really nasty question, but I know that so many other people are thinking it as we're talking. You were 22 years of age when this first came about. You know, you were young, you were looking forward to your life with your special person. At the same time, you weren't really in any way anticipating this. Was there ever a moment where you thought, maybe I'm just not cut out for this, maybe I will leave the relationship?
No, not at all. When Warren and I got engaged, we actually sat down and talked about in sickness and in health. It might sound quite silly to be talking about just before you're pledging your love to someone, but I came from a family where it was a divorced family, and I never wanted to go down that path. And I always said, I'm going to find the right person, and I won't commit to myself to them unless I love this person so much. When I met Warren, I found the man of my dreams. It didn't matter what he looked like or what we could or couldn't do. As long as I had that love inside himself and inside me, that was going to burn brightly, I was going to stick with Warren forever. So funny how we spoke about in sickness and in health, because when the day came and I had to honour that, it was already sorted.
Yeah, so it's one thing to talk about these kinds of promises. It's another to have them tested, isn't it?
Although Warren had said to me many times at the start when he first was diagnosed and in the weeks following, he kind of gave me the option to actually get out. Look, Tanya, really? I promise to love and protect you forever, and unfortunately I can't do that now. You need to get on with your life, and I'm just going to be a vegetable and I won't be able to do the things we used to do. And I know deep down Warren didn't want me to go, but he was just being this perfect gentleman saying, look, if you need to go, I won't think anything less of you. But there was no other place I wanted to be. I was determined to stick it through and to rebuild our life again and, show the doctors that with a bit of love on your side, nothing in life is ever impossible.
Mm. At one stage, they sat you down after all that you'd been through and said, well, look, it would really be probably fortuitous if you were to put Warren into a nursing home. How did you respond to that?
At that time, the week before, I'd actually put out to God saying, look, I don't know what I can do anymore. Warren's deteriorating before my eyes. He can't communicate. What are we going to do? I've got to get him out of this institution or I'm going to lose him. He's going to die. And so I asked for an answer, and out of the blue this answer came by the doctors coming to me and saying, look, you should put him in nursing home placement. So it was a funny answer to my prayers at the time, but the light bulb went off straight away. This is the answer. They want to push him that way. I've got to go and I've got to do something for myself. So it gave me that determination, that strength to say, look, I'm going to take him home. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I need to care for him 24 hours around the clock, to feed him, toilet him, dress him, shower him, do everything for him. But I'll give it a go, and if I fail, well, then I've given it my best chance. And if I don't give it a go, then there's a chance that Warren will possibly die because he's caught every infection and every problem by just staying in a hospital bed. So I didn't think I had anything to lose. I just had to try and find some inner strength inside me to try and carry out this role. And, yeah, I just, don't get me wrong, I was a very scared young girl at this stage. I honestly don't know how I did it at the time. I look back now, 11 years on, and I kind of think to myself, my gosh, what were you thinking? How did you take him home? Were you crazy? Because I remember driving down along the expressway in a disabled taxi, and Warren had a tracheotomy tube, which is a breathing tube in his throat. And this day, driving along, he got some mucus caught in his throat, and he was coughing so much he was going purple. And the taxi driver was begging me to pull over and to stop and get an ambulance and all that. And we pulled over, and I said, look, it's okay, I can do with this. And the poor taxi driver was just about turning inside out, thinking, my gosh, this man's going to die. But it was one of those things, you just develop the skills as you go along, and if you're in control and just take a deep breath, it all works out. I managed to get the mucus plug out of his throat, suction it out, and we returned on our journey. But I look back and I kind of thought, what were you thinking, this man in a disabled taxi going home with no doctor beside you, no medical assistance? Mm. You were very brave and very naive, I think. But
sometimes those two things go together, don't they?
It all worked out. It started developing a pattern where I developed the skills and that in myself.
Yeah. Tanya Hayes is with us on Open House. Tanya, you've mentioned this a few times now. You've mentioned prayer. You've mentioned God. I know that your story has had a fair bit of exposure so far, even on A Current Affair and some other programs like that. I've never heard the faith aspect been mentioned, though, but it obviously sounds like you are somebody who does seek God with all of your heart.
I certainly do. I've come from a Christian background my whole life, and when the wheels fell off the cart with Warren, that was the only thing that I could actually hold on to. I think so many people look for so many things in life, materialistic possessions, money and other things in their life, but when the going gets tough, the doctors can't save you sometimes, and money can't buy your health and it can't buy your happiness. So you need to look within inside and find that strength. For me, it was God. It was what I had developed growing up in my life with my Christian background, going through school and going to church. And that's what I held on to because I had nothing else. I don't know what people hold on to if they don't have faith. When wheels really fall off the cart and they're really serious like this, we were living on death row day in and day out for those 446 days. So God was my strength that got me through every day. And I just kept holding on to that strength and to that faith and believing that somehow one day God would get us out of this situation. There were different times when I kind of thought to myself, look, God, if you want to take Warren, then that's okay too. I don't know how I'll deal with it at the time, but in my heart, I don't know, I just had this strong faith inside me that I didn't believe that God was going to take Warren, and I think that's what I stayed there for the long term, because all the doctors and nurses were saying, get on with your life, you're just 22, get out and party and enjoy yourself. And no one could comprehend the love that we had inside us. And I think God was giving me that strength each day to actually uphold me during this difficult situation. And I was trusting in God. And I think if you hold that trust and you don't look sideways and you completely trust, you'll be given the answer that you deserve.
Yeah. Tanya, what is day-to-day life like now? Because you are Warren's full-time carer.
Yes. Well, Warren doesn't have any intellectual brain damage, so he's still the fun-loving guy that I fell in love with. He just needs help with all his motor skills in life, from toileting, showering, dressing. I even have to feed Warren because he has a tremor in his left arm, which doesn't allow him to actually use a knife and fork. So we get up in the morning, we do bed exercises of stretching and strengthening, feed him breakfast, then he has a one-hour routine on a treadmill where he does some walking, take him to the shower, well, as I said, toilet, shower, and dress him, bring him back out, prepare morning tea. Then we have a child, so I look after our child for an hour, go back to Warren, lunch, some more exercise in the afternoon, preparation for dinner, and then anything that Warren needs, except for the use of a remote control, I have to actually physically do this for Warren. So it's a full-time job around the clock. And preparing for bed each night is a matter of transferring him into his wheelchair, lifting him into bed, putting all his splints and continence supplies onto him. And it's a routine that goes for about half an hour. And And then by about 9:30, it's Tanya time, time to be myself and to do things. But don't get me wrong, we do have fun during the day as well. That's not every day. They're the basic things. And then you try and fit life in between all these things as well.
Yes. Well, the amazing thing is, and it passed ever so quickly in the conversation you just had just that moment, is you actually have a child. And a lot of people would have thought, how on earth, you know, would that ever be possible? But it's lovely that you can actually celebrate Mother's Day, isn't it?
It is. It's a wonderful day to be a mother today. And many people said that we wouldn't be able to have children. And Warren had 150 x-ray scans and the doctor said he's probably sterile. Mm. We never gave up on our dream and kept believing that one day we could have children. So we gave it a go. When the time was right, I fell instantly and our beautiful little miracle Josh came into the world.
Beautiful.
So wonderful to share it with him. Yeah. Warren just loves Josh so much and it's fantastic.
Are carers getting enough support? I'll leave you on this one. I don't know even how you're supporting yourself when you're, you know, full-time looking after your husband. Are carers in general getting enough support for those kinds of roles that you're doing?
I don't believe they are. I'm an ambassador for Carers Australia and we're always hitting government for more support. With 2.6 million carers in Australia, they live on a disability carer's pension, which is very minimal, like $23,000 combined. So to pay all your bills out of that, it's very hard. They have no superannuation to fall back on later on. There's not enough respite out there. There's not enough education and training. And there's not even a proper office for carers. We fall under the Department of Ageing. And I don't think I fall into the category of ageing myself. So we need help in lots of different areas. So many carers are living on the poverty line. They're tired. They're exhausted. So we're looking forward to seeing what the budget is going to bring on Tuesday night, and let's hope that carers will be rewarded for the hard job that they do every day.
Well, Tanya, it's a hard job that you do every day, but it's inspirational too, and thanks for holding in there because you can provide inspiration of commitment to so many other people around the place. So it's great to have your story on Open House.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Yeah, it's Tanya Hayes with her extraordinary story of commitment and love and sacrifice and dedication and... She's also written her thoughts into a book called Love Has No Limits. TanyaHayes.com.au is her website.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.